This is Leader ReadyCast, a monthly podcast featuring real-world lessons, best practices, and action-oriented insights for the you're-it moments when you're called upon to lead. Leader ReadyCast is the official podcast of the National Preparedness Leadership Initiative, a joint program of the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health and the Center for Public Leadership at the Harvard John F. Kennedy School of Government. Subscribe to Leader ReadyCast wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
I'm Eric McNulty, and welcome to Leader ReadyCast. With the federal role in disaster preparedness, response, and recovery somewhat in flux, the roles of nonprofit and private sector actors are coming more into the spotlight. In fact, non-government organizations have long done some of the heavy lifting and provided essential support to communities, just out of not quite as visible sometimes as other entities. And the more we recognize what they do and the value it provides, the better we can understand the larger system and how to orient it to be ready when it matters most. Faith-based communities are an essential part of this effort. Their roots go deep into their communities, and one of their fundamental commitments is to service. They have invaluable local knowledge, and in some cases, extraordinary capability. To talk more about that, I'm joined today by Jimmy Minot and Daytona Erkin of Elevation Church, a global Christian ministry with several physical locations in North Carolina and elsewhere. Jimmy's director of security at the Elevation and an alumnus of the National Preparedness Leadership Initiative at Harvard. And Daytona is their outreach pastor and director. The Elevation community was quite active in the aftermath of Hurricane Helene in North Carolina in 2024, and it provides an excellent case study of one aspect of the non-governmental response. Jimmy Minot and Daytona Erkin, welcome to Leader ReadyCast.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, we're so glad to be here.
Oh, it's great. You know, and I wanted to start by laying some groundwork. And Elevation Church is more than a church, you know, the sort of the building with the steeple on the corner. It's a major ministry with several physical locations as well as an online presence. So what exactly comprises this entity, and help us give a sense of sort of scope and scale?
Yeah, I'll jump in, and Daytona, feel free to speak up. You know, it's first of all, it's quite an honor to be a part of the organization that we are. I know Daytona shares the same sentiments. A lot of us found out about Elevation Church through just attending the church on a normal weekend or a Saturday night. And we've gotten the opportunity to now to play a small part in the ministry. And so the cool thing is that we're getting ready to enter our 20th year of ministry. And so that's just been real exciting as we kind of, you know, come into that. And so the church was founded in 2006 by our pastor, Stephen and Holly Furtick, with a few other couples. And, you know, kind of, if you kind of break it into some categories, we have a fairly large physical presence comprised of about 19 campuses, a lot in North Carolina, some in South Carolina, Florida, Virginia. We have a campus in Toronto. And on average, I think it's around 17,000 people that attend regularly. But then kind of we call it our 20th campus, and that number does fluctuate as we open campuses. But we have a pretty significant digital presence, too. You know, all your platforms we stream church live on, and it's, you know, we have an online community called EFAM so that people, you know, really worldwide can engage with our ministry and feel like they're a part of it, even though they're not physically present. We have a music ministry comprised, you may have heard of Elevation Worship. Also Elevation Rhythm, which is kind of a branch of that, kind of aimed more at the younger audience. But, you know, they lead worship on our Sundays. They go on tour, Grammy Award winning. Just a really cool place to be where you can sing the songs that are written in the church. And, of course, what we're here to talk about today and what you all are, you know, wanting to share more about is our outreach and community engagement. You know, Daytona, feel free to jump in on that, on just kind of at a high level, what we do with partnerships and how we work with the community.
Yeah, absolutely. I love everything you said, Jimmy, about our church. And the only thing I would add is it's all of those things, and it's the local church. And since the start of the ministry, Pastor Stephen's been passionate about having a partnership model for outreach. So finding the amazing organizations that are doing the good work out in the community. And then as the church, we get to come alongside them, raise their arms and, you know, either help with volunteers, resources, or gifts of generosity. And that allows us to be the church and for them to be the heroes. So that's The strategy has evolved over the years, and the amount of partners that we get to serve alongside has adjusted over the years, but the heart of it has stayed the same, is that, we get to be the church and point people towards Jesus. And then we come alongside organizations that are doing incredible work out into the community and partnering alongside them.
Yeah, Daytona, that's great about like the real hero is the community, is our church volunteers that jump in and serve. I can remember when we started attending the church and getting to be involved with Love Week, which is where our community comes together and serves. And there's just so many opportunities. I think last year there were what, like over 3,000 different events where people could get plugged in. So making our church community, our volunteers feel like they are making such a huge difference.
If we had 3,000 that one week, it'd be tough. We had about 1,451,
Over
but we had tens of thousands of volunteers.
the course of the year, though, wasn't it? I think it was close to,
over
or
the
the
year. Yes, over the
yes, that I
year.
was looking referring to the annual report. Yeah.
I was like, Jimmy, I wouldn't have been upright by
We're
the end
going
of
to double your initiatives and goals for next year, Daytona. No, I'm just
There
kidding.
we go. Keep those ambitions high.
That's
Yeah, that's
right.
right.
Well, that's great. It sounds like, you really are a significant resource in the community as well as a support for the community, which can create sort of a force multiplier effect for the kind of work that can be done both in the ministry as well as on the secular side.
We're
Now,
grateful for what we get to do. It's really through the, like what Jimmy said, with the generosity of the people of our church. I feel like we're a dot connector between the generosity of our people and the organization. So we're grateful for what we get to do and the small part we get to play.
yeah,
Oh,
absolutely.
that's awesome. Now, this may be more in your court, Jimmy, but I'm taking that leading security across 19 physical campuses and online campus, the various aspects of the organization you just talked about, and that's going to involve a lot of influence beyond authority and sort of thinking up to those to whom you're responsible across those various aspects of the organization as well as beyond to your larger community. How do you lead effectively within the church? And then maybe perhaps Daytona, this may fall to you as well. How do you extend that leadership to the broader community? So what are some of the things you do to make sure you build trust-based relationships that you actually are able to get done what you needed to get done to keep that large community safe and secure?
Yeah, I was going to be very disappointed if you didn't have a meta leadership question, so
Of
Erica.
course, I was going to have that in there. You know that.
I appreciate that. I think when obviously when we're leading up, you've got to be able to build influence with those above you, and that's a keeping our senior staff informed, building trust with them, on how we're approaching. And this is specifically just related to security. And I sure have learned a lot since leaving, airport security to church security looks a lot different in terms of regulation and also in how you approach it from a different mindset and from showing grace and learning that people, are in different states of life. And so from a leading across standpoint, working with other teams that if you don't have the positional leadership, you've got to have the influence and you've got to be able to work with the teams. And so, one thing that I used to say a lot, at the airport is, you want to meet someone before you need someone. And, that can be captured in different areas, but like really starting to build that relationship. And I think that carries over into outreach as well with what Daytona needs is you want to start to build those relationships. The first time I come to you to need something, it doesn't need to be when I'm introducing myself. But on the security side, I really try to be a gateway, not a gatekeeper. So let's figure out how we can make this work. We want to be a bridge to support people. So I don't want it to ever feel like, well, security is just enforcement. No, we want to feel like support as well. So how can we, partner alongside you to help reach and align our goals? The cool part about being able to bring a lot of what I was able to connect and network at the airport to the church was just being able, with the leading beyond, being able to, and a lot of stuff of what we learned in MPLI of building those relationships, well on across. So with like our local police department, emergency management, we even have a large church security consortium that I'm a part of that we just share some of the things that we've got going on and what we can learn from each other. Because none of us are really the experts. We learn from each other constantly, and and see what works well in other places. And so, to me, it's about building that relationship. So often when we do training, we're bringing our police officers in. We're using them to help us build the skill sets that we need to work with people. The engagement and de-escalation. DHS has I think it's called the power of hello, how you approach people and start a conversation. One of the things, we say often is that there's a thin line between someone who's broken and someone who's intending to cause harm. And so we want to approach all those situations with a lot of grace, because you just never know where people are in life. You don't know what they just may have come out of and what they're dealing with. And I think that's really where outreach then comes in and plays a huge role, because we can help meet those needs once we figure out what they are.
I'd agree with that, Jimmy, and the same. It's similar mindset with the organizations we get to serve with. We really truly try to make it a partnership. And so all of our locations have locally based partners, and then our central team will help with some of our either national or internationally impactful partners, and then or organizations that handle more sensitive matters that, similar to anti-human trafficking, where there might not necessarily be volunteer opportunities, but can build that relationship. And to Jimmy's point, like just the power of the hello. I was on a partner trip, was it, I think last week, and was getting updated prayer requests from our partner rep on, for her husband and their family. So it's very much a relationship. And so then that makes the work we get to support them with, there's just that much more buy-in from the teams that get to serve with them.
Well, that's great, and good for both of you that you're doing some reaching out. And I'm hoping our listeners who are in the formal sector, the formal response sector, don't forget to reach out as well. Don't wait for Jimmy or Daytona to call you. You can call them as well,
That's
and
right.
the people in your local community, because there's amazing resources there and capacity, capability, and compassion, which is a lot of what we're going to need in that response and recovery period. Tell us a bit about Hurricane Helene. What was it like on the ground? How did it affect the communities you serve? And what was your experience like?
Well, I think one of the things that stood out about Helene was that it was in our state, right? Like it wasn't the first hurricane that our church has supported partners on that were responding. There's several, unfortunately, there's several every year, but to see it so close to home in an area that's not prepared to, navigate a hurricane, it was heartbreaking. What was incredible to see was just the response of the communities and of our partners. That it really was an all hands on deck, because everybody just seemed to have a like mind and a like heart of saying we need to help, and we need to, come alongside people that are experiencing arguably the worst season of their life. So it was loud, it was difficult, it was heartbreaking, and it was encouraging and remarkable how people showed up.
And when you talk about showing up, what does that look like? Are you providing food, water, housing,
So
what shelter? What kind of things you guys? What kind of things you actually do?
we do everything through our partners. They're the heroes in this. So this one we went through, oh gosh, a handful. The City Impact, Samaritan's Purse, Convoy of Hope are just a few that did respond. And if this wasn't a recorded call, I'm sure I could think of at least four others. But so they were bringing the supplies and, doing that. And then something that we partnered with the National Guard, Samaritan's Purse, and Operation Hilo to do a like winter supply drive for our church. So somebody from our online team created an Amazon link for like a gift registry, and we posted it anywhere and everywhere that we could. And the church showed up. The generosity of our church is remarkable. We broke the post office a couple of days that week, and so then it was an all hands on deck on the warehouse to be able to sort it and get it to our partners, and and people donating semis to load up things and head out to Western North Carolina, knowing that the temperature was dropping drastically and quickly. So that was, again, we were the dot connector, and that was the part we played in that. A partner came and said, "Hey, this is going to be a need." And then another partner was like, "Hey, we can help with logistics." And we said, "Okay, we can rally the church." And so that That's what that was like. It was a lot of long hours for the team in the warehouse, and they just did such a everyone is volunteers constantly. Anytime I'd go back there's another round of volunteers, and so it was just really encouraging to see the church getting to be the church, and then being able to pass those supplies to organizations that know what to do with it.
Eric, one of the cool things that and Daytona can probably fill in anything I miss on this, that just really like made me emotional when all this was going on was when she talked about breaking the post office. And I think I shared this story with you that the church just came together, and I think over 14,000 packages were sent. But the thing that I don't think we expected that they really highlighted is that, if you buy something on Amazon as a gift, you can put a note in there. And so many people were sending in prayer requests, and so we're meeting them tangibly, but then also people need their needs met, but spiritually, they need hope, they need Jesus. And so we were, that was so, to me at least, that was so cool to see that unexpected part of what came about within that day. I don't know if there's more to add to that, but it was just, to me, it was like worth noting how powerful that piece was that y'all highlighted.
Yeah, I think that was I cried all the time that we seen that we had garlands of the prayers for the people. So somebody would send a coat and then a prayer for whoever was going to get it, and somebody had sent, so there was so we broke it up by gender and then the type of supply and age group and all this stuff. So there's several different boxes and pallets going out, but somebody had sent a dinosaur blanket, for a child, and it was like, dinosaurs are cool, but so is Jesus, like praying for you. And just people taking that extra time to do it, that it wasn't just in a simple click. It was ministry that they were sowing into, instead of just thousands of prayers coming in. It was definitely a bright spot in a very challenging circumstance.
Yeah, powerful to see people rallying around praying, but also taking action, working hand in hand.
Absolutely. And I think that's again, you got the tangible and intangible aspects of the response, and people have needs beyond just the physical, and it's great that you're able to help meet those. And again, for our listeners who may be thinking about how do you think about what a community like this can do in terms of support in an incident, I talk about this as predictable surge, that you should look at this and say, elevation, something happens, they are going to respond. So you should know how they're likely to respond, what they can do, what they can't do, and begin to think about how you plan that in. And whoever your local organizations are, where you happen to be, again, reach out to them and see, because that generosity is going to unfold. We know after every major incident, there's an inflow of stuff. And if that stuff isn't well organized and get to the right people, it's a lot of wasted stuff. And so being able to work with people who know how to do it and organize it in a way that logistically makes sense and gets things handled appropriately, and who work well with others and play well with others is an important lesson to take away from this conversation. And any stories you can tell, I'm sure you get some heartwarming ones about the response from the people, the recipients of this generosity.
Oh, goodness. Yes. So we went out with Samaritan's Purse to, and forgive me, I can't remember which fire station it was. It's a volunteer fire station in Western North Carolina. And they had like pulled all the trucks out, and it was just this, it was a drop of supplies, and the community was coming in and out. And there are people there that had lost everything. And they said that they had seen organizations like Samaritan's Purse and the church show up, and it wasn't, they didn't say Elevation Church, they just said the church show up. And I was like, yes, it's the right thing. Like, this is what we're supposed to do, is come alongside people in dark places. So being able to sit with people and pray with them at the fire station, and at a church that was across from the river, and the water line was above their sanctuary windows, and their sanctuary was on the second floor. They were gutting it out, and to be able to pause and pray with them, to be able to remind them. And it was the overwhelming gratitude that they showed, and to know that we weren't doing, like, it was a small part. We were praying to come and sit alongside people, but it was just such a reminder that we're designed to do things in community, and we're designed to help carry each other's burdens. And it's like the person that you share your burdens with, it's not a burden to help carry, right? Like, it was an honor to be able to go to the fire station, and it was an honor to go to the church, and an honor to sort the supplies because there's an opportunity to remind people that while this is devastating, you're still seen and you're still loved and there's still hope, even when it feels really dark and loud right now.
Yeah, I'd love to see that. We hear that word community come up because we are, as humans, we're a social species. We're meant to be together, work together. That's why we do so much in groups. That's we have that natural altruism and natural desire to help each other, and as you say, help carry each other's burdens. And so, it's good that you were able to do that with such grace and such humility as well. I think that one of the challenges we often see in organizations that respond from a humanitarian perspective is that everybody's worrying about getting the credit, right? Because they're worrying about their donors or whatever it is. And so there isn't always a lot of support of each other. And I really appreciate what you've just said in terms of working with Samaritan's Purse and others, that you're there to be useful and to support as best you can. And it's okay to be in the background sometimes and not have to do a lot of brand promotion along the way.
I'm grateful for the organizations that we serve with because there was it was I've heard the phrase no logos, no egos that we're in this together.
Yep.
And all the partners that we've served with both for Helene and other after other disasters and other emergencies, I've seen that to be a consistent response. So I'm grateful for the team mentality and that we can all play our different parts to be a body of Christ to help one another. Because there were so many organizations working to be like, okay, you take this truckload. Okay, this organization will take this truckload. And so it was, I'm very grateful for the positive experience it was. And just the organizations we served with were all class acts and just easy to respect and easy to serve with.
Yeah, and one of the concepts we talk about in meta leadership, and Jimmy, you'll appreciate this, is called swarm leadership. And it is when you trigger those highly collaborative and cooperative human behaviors. And one of the behavioral principles there is no ego, no blame. And so when you say no logos, no egos, that really struck a chord with me because again, when I think it was President Kennedy once said, when you don't care who gets the credit, you can get an awful lot done. But to be able to do that and operate at a high level of emotional intelligence, focus on the mission, focus on helping people, and then again, we get into the flow. We are meant to work together, and so we have a can have an enormous degree of cooperativity, which is beneficial to the community.
I
Now,
think
you talked a lot about.
that should be a new term that you guys incorporate, the no logo, no ego. I like that. Daytona, that's great.
I like that one. I do
Coin
like it very
that.
much.
I've heard it, but I can't remember who said it either. But yes, I love that. It's just a great reminder. And I was like, well, Jesus is at the head, so really that's all that matters. Let's do our part.
There you go. So I'm curious about you've talked a lot about your people, organizations like Samaritan's Purse. What was your interaction like with the formal government response network? Where did you work well together? Where did you find gaps that you needed to fill? How did that unfold?
So we got connected with the National Guard, and that's when it was like a National Guard Operation Hilo, Samaritan's Purse, Elevation Church, FaceTime, or a couple of meetings that way. I wasn't on those calls, so I can't speak to how the dialogue went down there. I'm assuming very positive because the rest of the time working together, it was very positive. Like it was just, hey, there's a need. We see an upcoming need that's going to be tremendously impactful or detrimental if we don't respond. And there was just this, hey, what can everybody do and what can everybody contribute? So from my seat, everybody we served with it during that whole time, it was an all hands on deck approach. So from my perspective, it was very positive.
And Jimmy, did you see any of that, or were you not in that particular part of the of things?
Yeah, at that time I was not part of that, but I know hearing from Daytona and the other team that, it was, very much a coordinated effort. And,
Yeah.
it takes those, nonprofits, it takes the community to really come together to help, bridge some of those gaps, like, bringing a collective effort of volunteers together that can, pack kits that go into areas where they need, additional resources. So.
Yeah.
Well, that's good because it's we've been talking about whole of community response for more than a decade now, and it doesn't always live into the potential embodied in that name. But it's good to sound like, it sounds like you were welcomed in and you had a good positive relationship at the state level. And and perhaps the federal folks were not operating directly with you, but it's good to hear with at the state level it was working well.
Yeah, very grateful for that.
What were some of the positive surprises you came across as you saw people adapting to these trying circumstances? Were there some particular standout moments of people stepping up to get things done?
Oh my goodness. Yes, it was tis no, we broke the post office because of people's generosity and the post office saying, "Hey, can you guys come help?" And then like so many different organizations working together. It was, I feel like if there is a way to see joy from an aerial view or satellite view, despite the tragedy and wreckage and displacement that the hurricane caused, I think there was a lot of light that could have been seen in that. Because there was just this, I mean, when we went out there was parts of the road that were just gone. You know, there were sinkholes and there were so many trees down, and there were people there cutting and trying to clear it. You know, the church was destroyed and the congregation was there trying to clean it up. You know, the fire the like volunteer leader of the fire department, him and his wife had several children and they hadn't been home in 16 days, and they were grateful to be able to welcome and hug people and give them supplies. And so it was just, I don't, just this collective hope beyond the circumstance, right? It was people being forward thinking, and from, you know, somebody who could, we had somebody send in what they could crochet, and the note was said, "I can't afford to do a large gift, but I know how to crochet, so I made a bunch of hats." And it was like we were moved by that just as much as we were the 14,000 packages that came in, because it was people just saying, "I want to help. Here's how I can help." And then their collective yes, like God just multiplied that in so many ways in that season. Sorry, I'm getting emotional just thinking about being able to see the hope that resurrected despite the tragedy this affiliated with Hurricane Helene.
Yeah, I think what makes me emotional too, and just thinking back through in Daytona, the timeline, I don't have exactly right, but just how, the support that the church and the community and the volunteers provided was not just like event-based or seasonal, it's continual. I think you had the initial response to Helene, and then we get into the winter months where they need winter clothing. So it's not like a one and done. It's like the church continuing to come back. Like, because a lot of times you have an event that happens, everybody's quick to respond, but then like you've met my needs. Now here's the next thing, because I don't have a house, because this, you gave me shelter, but now I've got the next thing. So how do we continue to show up? And that has been just really cool to see how the church responded to that.
Absolutely. So we have on our website a spot devoted to long-term recovery through our partners. So it's not an event that we're hosting. It's just linking what organizations we serve with that have ongoing relief efforts. So City Impact has an option, and we're going to try and serve alongside them during Love Week to build house frames. Samaritan's Purse is donating like 500 homes. I think Mercy Chefs has a permanent kitchen now in Black Mountain. I know Convoy of Hope was in there. So it's just like to see, I'm so grateful for our partners that stay beyond when the camera coverage is there. And so we've, knowing that this is in our home state, you know, we're getting the opportunity to see that they're around to not only meet the immediate needs, but to help people find relief and then restoration. And that I think is just absolutely remarkable.
Well, recovery is long, difficult, and unglamorous work, so it can be hard to maintain attention. So it's good I know these various organizations are some of the organizations that do that such important work. How do you keep your Elevation community engaged in that longer haul, if at all? How do you get them to continue to make it? You're right. After the initial incident happens, there's always a swell of oh, there's the need, let's go help. And then 6 months or a year later, it's a lot harder to get that enthusiasm. So how do you keep going to support those organizations that are at the front lines of recovery?
That's such a great question. And what I'm really grateful for is the senior leadership of our church, you know, Pastor Stephen, casting vision for the partnership model from the very beginning. What is that has stayed throughout the 20 years of ministry. So we serve consistently year round, and that's a value of our church. So while there might be more attention during specific times of year or after a specific crisis, the people of our church, they serve. And so it's just something where the events look different. And, you know, depending on what it looks like, you know, I can there's some things I can go serve with Samaritan's Purse, but I can't build a house, right? So not everybody can do everything, but everybody can do something. And yeah, that's just the posture of the generosity of our church. So there, it's not abnormal for them to see serving opportunities, because that's just a value that is in the DNA of our church.
Yeah, I think it's like you said, it's in the consistency of the support. It's not just a one and done. We serve 1 week a year for the community, or when an event happens that the church is coming together, there's always serving opportunities available. And so it becomes more of a habit to give back. And so gives people a purpose too, volunteers especially, a purpose through serving.
Yeah.
And so if for our listeners who have now been inspired by this conversation and they're thinking, okay, I need to reach out to the faith-based organizations in my community, any tips from your side of the table as to how best to do that if they're a little intimidated of maybe they don't attend that church or they're from a different faith background? What recommendations do you have to sort of bring down the intimidation level if one exists?
Oh, sure. Well, I would say start with what you can. So, I mean, I navigate some health issues. So, like I said, I won't be built. I'm not the one building the house, but I can come alongside and pray with somebody. So, it's figuring out what you can do, finding an organization that aligns with the passion God's already given you, and dive in, right? Like, I don't think anybody will regret the time they spend investing to help other people. Even if it doesn't work out quite like you expected, or it changes a couple of things, it'll give you like there's no way it's ever a bad investment. Like, you're gonna learn something from it, and odds are you're gonna fall in love with it and become that much more ignited to do it that much more. So I would say start with what you can, where you can, with who you can, however you can.
So my final question for each of you is the one I asked all of my guests. What gives you hope? And Jimmy, why don't we go to you first and we'll end with Daytona.
Yeah, I mean, what gives me hope, I think, is it's just so powerful to see the collective effort when the partners come together, when our volunteers, when our people in our church stay after a church service to for thousands of them to gather around and pack hygiene kits, or to pack backpacks to go to kids that need them, or food kits or whatever it is. It's to see them come together to make such a difference. That, like Daytona was saying, the egos are set aside, everybody's coming together to work, and then that goes beyond our church where, no matter what your belief is, your background, what company you work for, we see the need to meet the community that's in need. And it's when you see it all come together, it becomes very emotional because, people do really care. We all have our differences, but when you see people come together in these moments and when we see opportunities to come together, it's to me, that gives me hope in people and what we can do as a collective effort just to continue to meet people where they are.
I love that. I'm not to give the classic Sunday school answer, but Jesus gives me hope, and then seeing glimpses of him in people. And I mean, his name doesn't even need to come up in the conversation, and you can see a posture of service, right? I think, like, how did he live? He lived serving others. And so when you get to see that, it's like, oh goodness, that gives me hope, knowing, you know, life is loud, circumstances are loud, the world's kind of upside down. That's nothing new. But to see hope in Jesus, his consistency and his presence, and to see him embodied in his people that are out serving, that gives me hope no matter how loud circumstances can feel. Yeah, there's always hope on the horizon.
All the work that you and your colleagues do gives me hope, and I want to thank you for joining us for this episode. Now, my guests today have been Jimmy Minot and Daytona Erkin of Elevation Church. They've shared some of their leadership lessons from Hurricane Helene. I hope you find them useful and carry them forward in your own community. And as always, be ready to step up and lead when it matters most.
This has been another episode of Leader ReadyCast from the National Preparedness Leadership Initiative. Subscribe to Leader ReadyCast wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and find out more about us at npli.sph.harvard.edu. Follow us on Twitter at @HarvardNPLI. Thanks for listening, and be ready to lead.